list of voters log to you by www.fistoffan.net.
Hello, I'm Stuart Lee.
And I'm called Richard Herring.
And for the next half hour, we'll be talking comedy.
To avoid people saying things like,
"Are you the
that?" That's the small talk.
Baffled looks in the audience.
I can't hear a bloody thing.
It's a private joke, that one.
Is that so wrong?
Jesus was so cool. But then some people got jealous of how cool he was, so they killed him. But then he rose from the dead. He rose from the dead, danced around, and went up to heaven. I mean, that's so cool. Jesus was way cool. No wonder there are so many Christians.
There's quite a lot of American stuff in the things that we liked, but the King Missile thing was just this band that we came across that is a lot funnier than a lot of comedy. I mean, I don't even know if it's meant to be a joke, actually. It could be.
I think it is. It's just so subtle. It's just the slight element of sarcasm for me.
We always found religious stuff really funny, irrespective of what your beliefs are. There's, you know, a humorous thing is any kind of absolute belief system.
Anything you can't, kind of, you're not allowed to question.
Yeah.
And when, especially if you like somewhere religion, where there are so many questions about the truth of it or not. So yeah. I mean, I think it comes very, the pomposity of it is what's funny about it.
You don't see it dealt with much better than you do in Life of Brian, really.
Oh, come on, Brian!
Will you be quiet?
Don't pick your nose.
I wasn't picking my nose, I was scratching.
You were picking it while he was talking to that lady.
I wasn't.
Leave it alone, give it a rest.
Do you mind? I can't hear a word he's saying.
Don't you do you mind me. I was talking to my husband.
Well, go and talk to him somewhere else. I can't hear a bloody thing.
Don't you swear my wife.
I was only asking her to shut up so he can hear what he's saying, big nose.
Don't you call my husband big nose.
Well, he has got a big nose.
Could you be quiet, please?
What was that? I don't know. I was too busy talking to Big Nose.
I think it was Blessed Are the Cheesemakers.
What's so special about the cheesemakers?
Well, obviously, it's not meant to be taken literally. It refers to any manufacturers of dairy products.
I like the way in that clip you can hear Jesus really quietly in the distance. It's like really brilliant Sermon on the Mount. The classic feast of Christian teaching and people just arguing about rubbish. It's fantastic.
Yeah. It's not at all parodying Jesus, the Sermon on the Mount part, but it's just like that great idea of someone just thinking, but there must have been loads of people there, so what about the people who are standing at the back? There's no amplification. It's just this great scene about, you know, the people that are going, what's he saying? Blessed are the cheesemakers and stuff like that. And then it becoming an argument. It's great because I think, like the biblical story, all the characters in it are so venerated that you don't actually consider that people were just as stupid then as they are now. So to have people arguing about whether they said cheesemakers or peacemakers and
it's really,
whether
I mean,
they have big noses or not.
That bit's just really apposite in as much as it's about a good message being misunderstood, you know, and literally misheard.
I was a very big Monty Python fan, but a kind of generation too late, so I'd never seen any of the TV
You're
shows.
A generation too late for all the things you like, aren't you?
I was, yeah. And so I'd only listened to all the records and everything, but then I remember when Life of Brian came out and it was a 15 or something like that, so I wasn't allowed to go. My parents wouldn't let me go, and I was really upset about it. And, you know, it was so important. And again, I think it was like partly growing up in a kind of rural area, so something like this, I couldn't go and see live comedy. I couldn't go see live anything, really, in Cheddar. Live animals I could go and see in the fields. But me and Stu met at college, and in 1986 or something, we started writing sketches for this fortnightly club at college. And someone sent me a tape they'd done of one of the shows, and you kind of listen back to it and you think, even though at the time we were really aware of not trying to be like Monty Python, you can still really hear the Monty Python in some of the performances and some of the ideas, you know. So it's, I think that's the natural progression, really, is that people kind of do stuff like the people they like and then eventually get to a point, hopefully, where they've got their own voice. Because, I mean, now at the moment, a lot of people are doing Harry Hill, aren't they, in the stand-up circuits.
I mean, we both really like Harry.
But I think, like, again, I think if you've got a comedian who has a very strong kind of voice and personality, it's very, I mean, I find it very hard not to lapse into a bit of Harry Hill every now and again. Steve Coogan, when we worked with Steve, it was another person like that. It was very hard not to be influenced by the way he did comedy. You know, we actually did a show in 1991 with him called The Dumb Show in Edinburgh, which was Stu and me, Simon Munnery, Steve Coogan and Patrick Marber, which should have been like a fantastic show. But it was nearly a good show, but we all kind of didn't fall out, but we all kind of went off in different directions and it didn't quite work out.
It's weird though, because when Rich was at school, he used to do stuff with this guy Steve Cheek, and Steve did a double act called God and Jesus when he was a student, and then the other guy from it, Simon Munnery, He now does this character, Alan Parker, and The League Against Tedium. I mean, he's one of the best stand-ups in the country stroke world, really. But Rich already knew the guy he'd done the double act with before, so it was almost like, you know, these kind of threads were coming together.
Yeah, so that's where I really started writing comedy.
I remember when God and Jesus went out on Hey Radio. I remember listening to it in a damp student flat in 1988, and couldn't believe that somebody I thought was really good was on the radio.
Took my wife on holiday recently to the Caribbean.
Did you make her?
Yes, I'm God.
Bloke said to us the other day, so you call yourselves God and Jesus, do you? Well, I don't find blasphemy very funny.
So I struck him down. Saw a bloke the other day, looked a bit like Dave.
You don't know Dave, of course.
It's a private joke, that one. Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Doctor, doctor, I have this terrible problem with knock-knock jokes.
Doctor, doctor, I have this terrible problem with knock-knock jokes. Who?
Yes, it's two in one, that one.
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Is a bell necessary upon a bicycle?
Come in, then. We went to a funeral last week.
Gate crashed.
Everyone seemed a bit down, a bit depressed. We thought we'd tell them some of our death jokes.
What's the difference between dead people and boomerangs?
Oh, you've heard it.
It was really good sort of anti-comedy. It shows you how banal the whole structure of jokes are, and it's quite a good starting point. And another thing that me and Rich both liked independently of each other before we met, which does the same sort of thing, is Ted Chippington, who was this stand-up from Stoke-on-Trent. And I'd seen him in Birmingham when I was about 15. And Rich had got the records, because obviously no one would go down to Cheddar.
Well, interestingly enough, Steve, you know, again, Steve Cheek had the, I mean, I think there are similarities between Ted Chippington and God and Jesus, certainly. And Steve had got the record of Ted Chippington, which Stu was one of the gigs
on that record.
So that's kind of quite weird that we both go for this quite obscure thing, and then it's quite weird that, you know, Steve would then go and meet Simon at college, and then we'd be working that. I mean, Steve now works as an academic in Bristol now, which is probably a much better thing to be doing. He's doing something worthwhile.
When I saw Ted Chippington, though, I'd never really liked stand-up before then. Because I didn't really like the, you know, alternative stand-ups. But he just seemed really funny because he would come on and basically do the same joke over and over again, which was, I was walking along this road the other day, bloke came up to me, he said, how far is it to the railway station? I said, 1 mile, roughly speaking. He'd do the same thing over and over again with changing the question until the audience either became stupefyingly bored or else angry or else found it really, really funny. And it just proved the utter banality of stand-up. And in this clip that we've got, he's like trying to do material, but the audience, who think they're so hilarious, are shouting out, trying to spoil it by shouting stuff out. And he just reacts brilliantly and just closes the whole thing down, but the audience don't see what it is that he's doing. Yeah.
Which is a great thing about it, is that it's, you're in on the joke. Yeah. It's a great thing to put on the album because it's him dying, but actually really winning by miles, even though he's died at the time. He's just much, much funnier than the person in the audience.
Fuck damn you.
Are you the fruit
tender grass? Got a few questions, so take it in turns if you don't mind, you know. Who we got first? This weird folk down here. What's your question, mate? That's not a question. What's your question? How far is it to the railway station? Is it bloke? Actually, quite a damn true story to tell you now. Outside the door it was, quiet down if you don't mind. I'm doing this interview, you know, with a bloke. And I'd nothing interesting to say, as you can imagine. But a character from the other bar came walking by. And I said to him, how far is it to railway station, mate? He said, well, it's about 1 mile. It's a true story, that, you know. Here's a joke. That bloke who asked me that question will know that's a true story. Here's a good joke. Walking down the road the other day, Bloke said to me, I'll answer you after this joke. If you don't like this joke, I'll answer your question, okay?
All right.
Walking down the road the other day, bloke comes up to me, he said, tell us how far is this railway station, mate? He said, 1 mile. He said, 1 mile? I said, 1 mile, roughly speaking. Couldn't be too sure, you know. Couldn't be just over 1 mile. What was that you drove there? Who threw that? Didn't hurt me anyway.
Chief joke.
Are you the front end of a what?
An ass. Yeah, are you the front end of an ass?
No.
Are you the rear end of an ass?
No.
So in other words, you're the end of an ass?
No. In other words, I'm a human being.
I love the way that bloke all the way through that is showing, are you the front end of an ass? Or that you can't wait to get his terrible joke.
I mean, it appeals, you know, when you're doing stand-up gigs sometimes, you've got a long, complicated idea, and you know there's a payoff, and it's good, and you'll have some bloke who's got a stupid thing he wants to say, and you don't even really want to address him because it'll break the flow of it, you know. And I love that. And then he comes back with it so well. He just goes, no, I'm a human being. I love it. It's just a factual answer. And also the guy's going, are you no end of an ass? And his mate's trying to help him out by going, a donkey, right? Which doesn't even work. So the blokes who are trying to heckle him are so stupid, they can't even, like, do the joke properly.
It's not the greatest night of comedy ever.
But it's very true. And he's clearly like, a talented man who was up against it, you know.
I mean, I found doing stand-up, Stu did very well, very quickly on his own doing stand-up. But I found it very difficult. I was trying to do character. I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I was sort of finding my feet. And it was actually, you actually found you started edging towards doing an act that would get you work, or that trying to work out what the promoters wanted rather than trying to do stuff that's original and good. So I think that happens a lot. And increasingly, as more and more people doing it, it's harder and harder. And that's why you get
Somehow Harry Hill and Al Murray doing his landlord act, and Simon as well to a lesser extent, have all done well through the circuit. But I don't know how they did it, really, because, you know, those kind of acts aren't really encouraged.
My mum had a system for feeding us, and the system she used was the scoop-chop system. You're probably familiar with it. Up until the age of 5, we were allocated one scoop of mash, one chop. Pork or lamb, they're the main two, the pork and the lamb. Beef gets a sausage, doesn't get a chop.
I don't make the rules up, do I?
From the age of 5 to 8, we were allocated two scoops of mash, one chop. And from the age of 8 onwards, we were allocated two scoops of mash, two chops. That was the ceiling level. Oh, yeah. She wouldn't go any higher than that. So you can imagine, we'd get to about 30, 33. We fancy a little extra mash.
Is that so wrong? Is that such a dirty boy, bad boy in your bed? I should have my own key, though, shouldn't I?
So we get to about 30. We fancy a bit more, so what we did one night, we snuck into her kitchen. Well, I didn't, my brother, the roundhead. He snuck into her kitchen and he substituted her mash scoop for one ever so slightly larger. Oh, yeah, only ever so slightly, not so she noticed. We got an engineer in with a lathe. And he took a tiny slither of aluminium from the scoop. That night, she's doling out mash from a slightly larger scoop. We're getting a tiny bit of extra mash. Imagine the smallest amount of mash that you can think of. Think of it. Smaller! The night after that, we snuck into her kitchen. We substituted that scoop for one ever so slightly larger. Notice that night. We're getting slightly more mash. The night after that, we snuck. We substituted that scoop for one ever so slightly larger. Until finally, 3 years later, she's doling out mash from a scoop the size of a paddling pool. She's employing two small boys. They start work 7 in the morning. Peel and mash. Peel and mash. To be honest with you, it was too much mash. Yeah. Well, you know, we're only getting two chops, remember? The chop-mash ratio was all wrong. So what we did, we snuck back into that kitchen and we substituted that huge scoop for one ever so slightly smaller. Not so she'd notice, we kept all the scoops in a lock-up garage and we worked our way, gradually, all the way back down. But in fact, we were so sick of mash, we went a bit smaller. Oh, yeah. We had some tiny scoops made. Then, of course, we're only human. A couple of weeks later, we fancied a bit more mash. We go a bit larger. And then, of course, the memory of the mash sickness would come back. We'd go a bit smaller. Then we fancy a bit more, we go larger. We fancy a bit less, we go smaller. We go larger, we go smaller. We go larger, smaller, larger, smaller. I can't see the cards, you'll have to make them bigger. But do you know, in the end, we settled for that original mash scoop. Well, Mum knows best.
I just think it's beautiful because it's just the logic of it. Where we started with the idea, the logic of it's so fantastic. It's just logical all the way through. It kind of makes sense coming to these conclusions, then coming, you know, and it's such a Shaggy Dog thing, and then coming back to the Mum knows best thing. I just think it's a fantastic punchline. And the mash sickness came on as
a lot of his stuff's really good because there'd be little sub phrases in it that suggest a whole other tangent that we could have explored, like mash sickness and what how would this manifest itself, and but
to be honest it was too much mash. I think so. What I really like about it as well is the way he ruins songs forever, so you actually hear songs and they're, you can only think of Harry Hill with like the One Night thing. I can only ever hear him doing that. We work with quite a lot of these people. Stu Scripps said it, Harry Hill, and I'm helping Al Murray with his trying to get his sort of sitcom-y sort of show off the ground.
Is it set in a pub?
It's set in a pub, surprisingly.
Good idea.
So,
you get paid for thinking of that.
You sort of say that to him jokingly, but he has had people coming up and going, should do a TV show. I think it should be, you know, we could set it in a pub. And, you know, going, well, yes. You know, and these people, these TV people are coming up as if this is like, they've thought of a fantastic idea. But, I think it's certainly going to be very successful when someone finally realises that it's, you know, it is a great thing. I mean, I can't believe
it's amazing how these things slip through, though. See, he's like a Manchester act in that it's a character act and it's good. And sort of that's the scene that Coogan came out of, and John Shuttleworth as well, who seems to have Graham Fellows, who does John Shuttleworth, used to did that, you know, Jilted John record in the mid-70s. Gordon is a moron. But he, you know, came back in the 80s doing this John Shuttleworth character of the sort of local pub entertainer.
I lent him a fiver once. He was at it just happened to be a cash point behind me, and he was in a hurry, and he said, "Could you lend me a fiver?" And I gave him a fiver, and he sent me a cheque for it. But it was his name. His real name's Graham Fellows, but he's got a chequebook in the name of John Shuttleworth, which I just thought was fantastic. There is a little bit of madness to it. So obviously, I didn't cash the cheque I've got up in my toilet.
Well, he knew you would do that.
I know exactly.
He knew you would do that. He was saving a fiver.
I know he did.
An Austin ambassador, why wretch? My Austin ambassador, why wretch? It's the car that I revere. My Austin ambassador, why wretch? Come on, why wretch? Don't keep asking me why wretch. It just happens to be that year. Come on, let's get we're off. I'd even say no to a Rolls with the chauffeur, a brand new Toyota, a Skoda. Give over. Austin ambassador, why red? Come on, why red? My Austin ambassador, why red? It's a car that I live in. Everybody, my Austin ambassador, why red? Lovely. Don't keep asking me. It just happens to be that year. Last time, my Austin ambassador, why red? Don't keep asking me. Why red? It just happens to be that year. It just happens to be that year. Oh, that's why. Look out! Thank you.
I like the crushing mundaneness of all of his songs and the observations about life. They're so just brilliantly boring, and that's something we used to write a lot like that when we wrote sketches and stuff. We used to write just very, very dull characters and people just talking in a normal way. And, you know, that's something that we kind of got through Spinal Tap, I suppose. Like the observations of just dull conversations that people were having.
Now, Henge, as we call it, again, code.
Code.
C-O-D-E. Let's do Henge.
you know, baffled looks in the audience, you know, what are they going to do? And then stage crew, what are they going to do? Let's do Henge, you see, I'll whisper to the lads, you know, and we, Henge, you'll go, Henge. We all know that it's going to be Stonehenge, you see, without having to say Stonehenge. Now, this was really a dream. This came to me in a dream. My ancestors really came from a druidic background, and either it was druidic or they just liked wearing those hoods. We really didn't know if it was a fashion sort of a thing or not. But my grandfather and great-grandfather up in the north would wear hoods and do these little ceremonies where they would do burn sticks and take a rock and throw it at their heads. And we used to think, you know,
drink
that,
a bit too.
And drink quite a bit, yeah. Quite a bit. And we used to think, well, of course, they're mad, you know. But they were really druidic in how they were fashioning their lives. So Stonehenge was really an anthem, if you will, to my ancestors who have, you know, very mysterious beginnings. And Stonehenge, once again, a metaphor for life, you know, where, you know, it's a piece of stone with a piece on the top and the sides where you can walk through it, but you can also come back, can't you?
You know, walk around it.
You can go around it, but you can also look up and you could climb and not see it because you'd be on top of it, you see. So it's like life, you know.
Well, it's great. I think it's just really good satire of interviews of anyone, especially pop stars, where they sort of they start saying something and don't really know where they're going with it, and then just say something entirely vacuous.
Well, is that really good Frank Zappa quote about pop music journalism? Is people that can't speak being interviewed by people that can't write for people that can't read? And it's amazing to think there's acres and acres every week of music interviews published, and yet they're the most inarticulate people who never have anything to say. But it's good the way that he sort of misuses words slightly, like when he talked about them fashioning their lives.
Yes, it just doesn't mean anything. The whole delivery of it is so fantastic as well. But it's just, you know, and they again, the characters in Spinal Tap take themselves so seriously, and it's such a pointless thing they do, which is true of nearly all pop music, really, where, you know, it's not really got much, and comedy as well, it hasn't really got much value beyond its immediate entertainment that it gives you. And if people start, which is what we're doing now, we're seeing now, talking in depth about how it works and everything, and it does, it's not really the point of it, is it? It's if people haven't really thought through what they're saying, like I haven't now, then you get a really rubbish bit. Oh no. when we were first starting out writing on Weekending.
Yeah, we saw it with Weekending, which was the gateway to comedy in the late 80s.
Which, actually, I just met a bloke in a pub the other day. He said he was in a pub 8 years ago on the table next to us and heard us talking about writing for Weekending and sort of then seen us progress on. So that was quite interesting.
That's interesting, isn't it?
Just came on and said, oh, I saw you 8 years ago. It's good to see you.
Right.
Moved on, but we
good to see you've moved on slightly.
Slightly, yeah. It was brilliant for us, and it was a little bit of a golden era because we were lucky with the producers, but we also met Peter Bainham there, who was... we like to say, even though this isn't true, we like to say he was a goth who lived in a tramp's hostel.
And he was living in a tramp's hostel very briefly.
I don't know when he was. But it's one of that was a great thing about Weekending, in that, you know, us coming as two kind of Oxford graduates could meet a guy who left school at 16 to go into the Merchant Navy, and where else would we have met this bloke in the world? And just find you have, again, you know, exactly the same sense of humour. We just have such... I mean, it was coming out of Weekending, and he had this idea, and Sarah Smith had the idea of putting him into our show, the Fist of Fun show that we did after Lana Nimrod, which is our first thing we did on our own. And it just kind of really worked within the context of the show, and it's Pete doing this kind of sad character who lives in Balham.
I want to talk about grooming. Being well turned out is crucial these days, particularly on important occasions, like if you leave the flat. If, like me, you often wear a shirt that you slept in last night, wear a jacket or a jumper over it to avoid people saying things like, that shirt looks like you slept in it last night. However, try not to sleep in the jacket and the jumper as well, as that'll just spoil things. If your teeth are rotting and getting a bit yellow, put some Tippex on them.
I should remember that time of getting in trouble with that.
Tippex,
yeah. The BBC were worried that children would try and paint Tippex on their teeth if that went out.
I've heard that for ages. That's really
funny, isn't it? Funny. We used to be in some good shows years ago.
I think he's probably one of the best writers. I think him and Graham and Arthur, who write Big Train. Yeah. You know, there is a lot. There is a lot of good stuff going on in Britain, and hopefully
its success will mean that someone asks us to do something.
Because they'll try and get Graham and Arthur, and they'll be too busy, so we'll be asked to write something. But you know, the stuff in the Alan Partridge again, which is Graham and Arthur, isn't it? In the clip for the two Irish guys, you know, it's you can really see Pete's hand in it. And I think we probably wrote some of the first Alan Partridge jokes on the Hour, and without claiming to have any claim to having created the character, which is all Steve's work. I think when they went on to Know Me, Know You, as good as it was, I think it, there's something lacking in it that isn't lacking in the sitcom, which is...
the tragedy.
You know, it's just the humour's just... And I think that's down to Pete, which is great.
No, I must say, I'm very grateful you've come over. Big fans of all the Irish stuff. yep. I love your pop music. Enya and the other one, Ripped Up the Pope. Bald chap. And I think... that's it.
Well, it's you too, of course.
Yeah, you too. Well, yeah, oh, fantastic. Sunday, bloody Sunday. What a great... it encapsulates the frustration of a Sunday, doesn't it? you wake up in the morning, you've got to read all the Sunday papers, the kids are running round, you've got to mow the lawn, wash the car, and you think, Sunday, bloody Sunday.
Yeah, I really hate to do this to you, Alan, but it's actually a song about...
yeah, Bloody Sunday is actually about a massacre in Derry in 1972.
Massacre. Ugh, not playing that again.
You ever been to Ireland, Alan?
No, I'd love to go.
It amazes me when people say that and it's only 49 quid on a plane.
Yeah, I think that's what puts me off. Well, that's the small talk. Now let's get down to business. Now, your programme. What's the big idea?
And if you're wondering who I am and what I'm doing here, I'm Rob Newman. And I'm here to tell you that this time, next week, it's my turn to be talking comedy.
This download is brought to you by www.thisstuffband.net.